Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Good evening, Robin Williams with In Conversation, a chat about science in its broadest sense. This time a second extended conversation done via Canada. It was recorded for Quirks and Quarks, the science show's sister programme on CBC Radio. We recommended a few of our more tantalising research folk and connected them via satellite to Toronto to see what Bob MacDonald would make of them. Last week it was Mike Archer on farming native animals and keeping them as pets instead of cats and dogs. This time, another Australian with an American accent, Lisa Gershwin, who lives in Townsville, northern Queensland, and swims regularly with killer jellyfish. She's discovered several new species of them. So what about jellyfish? They're certainly not fish, and they're not made of jelly. So what, asks Bob MacDonald, can they be? Lisa Gershwin.
Jellyfish are these amazingly weird alien creatures that are kind of at the bottom of the tree of life. They're just little gelatinous balls of goo with stingy bits, and they're fabulous. They have a life cycle completely alien to what we know. They don't have bones or brains or anything like we think of animals having. They're just very, very strange. But the ones that I work with most of the time, I mean, I work with all kinds of jellyfish, but my main research interest is the box jellies and irukandjis, which are a very sophisticated type of jellyfish. I know, that sounds like a real oxymoron, but they are, and they have well-developed eyes with lenses and retinas and corneas, just like our eyes, and they hunt, and they see, and they're really, really strange, and they can kill you. So they're an absolutely fabulous group to work with. It keeps me up at night, it really does. I can't figure it out, and I just love it. I think it's fascinating.
Well, what kind of ranges of size of jellyfish do we see?
I've seen jellyfish full grown that are about a half of a millimeter tall. And the largest jellyfish that I know of is from the North Atlantic. It was described in the 19th century, and it's about 3 meters across the body. And the tentacles and hangy down bits extend about 60 meters roughly.
Holy smokes, 3 meters across the body. You mean that jelly, the bell that's over the top is 3 meters?
The bell, the jelly bit, yeah.
Holy.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is an enormous animal. I'm sure you could see it from space.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that would grab submarines or whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
Boy.
So my jellyfish that I discovered in 1997 with some colleagues, it is absolutely a tiny animal in comparison. It's only about a meter across the body, and the oral arms or the fleshy hangy down bits are about 8 meters long. The tentacles go much longer than that, but the real substance of the animal is about kind of a 1 meter by 8 meter cylinder, if you will.
That's still a big animal. I mean, any jellyfish that I've seen in aquariums or on beaches are only the size of dinner plates or smaller than that.
So no, it's true. Yeah. Chrysior acleos would make me come screaming out of the water if I turned around and saw it without notice. You know, it would definitely spook even me.
Now, does Australia have its own particular species? Because Australia, after all, is known as the land of, well, weird animals.
Oh, now you're just being unfair to the echidna.
Okay, of distinct animals, let's put it that way.
Yeah, we've got some absolutely spectacular creatures in the jellyfish world here in Australia. The ones that intrigue me the most are the irukandjis, which is probably a very, very strange word that most Canadians have never heard of, but it's a group of jellyfishes that are usually quite small and quite transparent and quite boring by jellyfish standards. You look at them and go, yeah, what's the big deal? The commonest one is about 1 centimeter in body height, although its tentacles go about a meter long, believe it or not. And it gives you a very mild sting, followed after about 20 to 30 minutes by a very, very severe sickness. And some species of irukandjis are deadly to humans. So it's a really amazing group, because here's these little tiny things that give these really minor stings that make you very, very sick and are life-threatening.
Wow. Well, how does an animal that's, what, the size of my thumbnail? Is that about it or less?
You must have very small thumbs.
Oh, okay. But you just said it's tiny though. I mean this is small. How can it?
It's probably more the size of your pinky fingernail, and yet it's so dangerous.
Well, how do they do that? How can something? Well, generally, I mean, how can jellyfish sting and be so dangerous to humans?
Well, all jellyfish have stinging cells called nematocysts, and these stinging cells are like little capsules with a harpoon coiled up inside. And the harpoon has venom on the outside and venom on the inside, and that has a hair trigger. So when the hair trigger gets triggered, of course, the harpoon comes flying out at a very, very tremendous speed, about 40,000 Gs, by the way, 40,000 times the force of gravity. So these are these tremendously dangerous little things, but they're tiny. They're like 25,000ths of a millimeter long. Tiny, tiny little stinging cells, but there's millions of them. So together, they inject venom underneath the skin, and they can inject quite a bit. Now, in the case of the Irukandjis, they don't inject very much at all, but it's the body's reaction to that toxin that gives us what we know as Irukandji syndrome, which is this constellation of very, very bizarre symptoms.
Well, what's it do to the body?
Well, hope you're sitting down for this.
Okay.
It's pretty mind-blowing. It gives you incredible lower back pain that you would think of as similar to an electric drill drilling into your back. It gives you relentless nausea and vomiting. How does vomiting every minute to 2 minutes for up to 12 hours sound? Incredible. Oh. It gives waves of full body cramps, profuse sweating. The nurses have to wring out the bed sheets every 15 minutes. It gives you a very, very difficulty in breathing where you just feel like you can't catch your breath. It gives you this weird muscular restlessness, so you can't stop moving, but every time you move, it hurts. It gives you a feeling of impending doom. Incredible. Patients believe they're going to die, and they're so certain of it that they'll actually beg their doctors to kill them just to get it over with. And all of this from this little tiny jellyfish. It's absolutely amazing. And by the way, now you might be thinking, oh, I'm not going to Australia.
Well,
they got
yeah.
jellyfish there. Well, guess what? They're in North America also, and they're in Europe, and they're in South America, and they're in India, and they're in Southeast Asia, and they're in Hawaii. They're all over the place. They're in the Florida Keys. We get Irukandjis, believe it or not, from North Wales in the UK to Victoria, Melbourne, actually, in southern Victoria, and Cape Town in southern Africa.
Wow.
So pretty much all the usable oceans of the world, we get Irukandjis. Just because you haven't heard of them doesn't mean they're not there.
Okay.
I don't want to scare you. That's just the truth.
All right. Well, if they're that common and they're that lethal, how often do people die from these things?
Well, here's the kicker of it. They don't leave a mark, and there's nothing to test for post-mortem. The mechanism of death is a heart attack or a stroke or drowning. So somebody's out on a yacht or a swim or a dive or whatever, and they're in the water having a good time, and they get sick and they have a stroke, and nobody knows it. Oh, they know they have a stroke and they know they die, but nobody knows what was the underlying cause.
It sounds like some plot out of a James Bond movie or something like that.
I know.
But
it's true. So, that's the kicker of it. It's true.
All right. Well, those are the ones where you're not sure what happened. But, I mean, how many confirmed cases of people dying from these jellyfish are there, say, in
a year? We have two confirmed cases, and those were based on two that happened in 2002 that were diagnosed with Irukandji syndrome before the people died, and they subsequently died. So we know that Irukandji syndrome in both of these cases caused the death. What happened in both of these cases was the blood pressure got very, very high, and their body simply couldn't stand it, and in both cases, their brains hemorrhaged. When I talk high blood pressure, I'm talking extremely high blood pressure. Irukandji syndrome causes blood pressures in the vicinity of 280 over 180. Incredibly lethal high blood pressures, even over 300 in some cases. Incredible deadly high blood pressures. And that's where we start getting all kinds of complications.
Complications? Sounds like it's head exploding stuff we're talking about here. Well,
yeah,
but
seriously.
But you say only two. I'm not minimizing the tragedy, but only two? If these things are so common, you'd think there'd be bodies all over the beaches.
Well, we do have fatalities from time to time. As you can imagine, people, you know, go for a swim and they have a heart attack or a stroke or they drown. It happens. The thing is, we don't know which cases had an Akanji syndrome underlying the heart attack or the stroke or the drowning. We don't know. So there's a very active area of research right now in going back and looking at historical cases and trying to figure out which ones may have been Akanji related, and also trying to identify a marker in the body that can be tested post-mortem. Very, very active research going on right now with these.
Okay, now before we destroy Australia's tourism industry here, I am planning...
Hang on, it's not just Australia. We've got things all over the world.
Yeah, but I'm planning to go up and visit the Great Barrier Reef. I wanted to make a little visit next week. So what should I do to protect myself against jellyfish stings?
It's very, very simple to not get stung by a jellyfish, and people don't realize that. Very, very easy. First off, you swim between the red and yellow flags. You swim at a patrolled beach because those are the places where the lifesavers are monitoring for the presence of jellyfish and other dangers. So you swim at a patrolled beach, and that's the safest place on the beach to swim because that's where somebody's actually looking out for what's going on. That's the first most important thing. Swim at a patrolled beach. The second most important thing is to wear some sort of protection against, you know, jellyfish on your skin. So we recommend a full body lycra suit. It's fabulous protection against stings, and it gives really good protection against UV. In Canada, I suppose you're not quite so worried about the UV and sunburn and skin cancer, but certainly in the tropics and in the southern hemisphere, we do worry about it because it's very prevalent. And so it's a very, very good idea, a very wise move to wear something such as a full body lycra suit. At the end of the day, you peel it off, you're not all greasy from the sun cream, and you don't have a raging sunburn that's going to ruin your holiday, and you haven't been stung by a jellyfish. Easy.
Okay. Now, what about for the tourists like me who are only going to be there for a day or so? I don't want to go buy a full lycra suit just for a quick swim to the beach.
Yeah, you can hire them at most dive shops and, you know, different sorts of beach kiosks and dive boats and things like that. I'll have them for hire.
Okay. Is there anything else you can wear if you don't want to go that route?
Well, how are your pantyhose?
My pantyhose? What, you're telling me I should wear pantyhose when I go to the beach?
They give fabulous protection against jellyfish, but not very good protection against the sun. So we don't recommend pantyhose for that reason.
Or in my case, the jeers from all the other guys on the beach, right?
Now, you know that when you're on one of Australia's famous beaches wearing pantyhose, you know Robin's going to be laughing at you, right?
Yo, okay. So pantyhose, are they seasonal? Are there times when they're around and other times when they're not?
Yeah, that's a really good question. They are certainly commoner in the warmer months, but we do get stings in specimens occasionally throughout the year. They're not as common in the cooler months, but yeah, we do get them throughout the year and in different places as well. You know, a lot of people think, oh, they're only in the tropics. No, they're not only in the tropics. They're just commoner in the tropics. People think, oh, they're only in Queensland. No, they're not only in Queensland. They're in Thailand, and they're in Hawaii, and they're in Florida, and they're in the Caribbean, and they're in a lot of places. So, you know, I think common sense aquatic safety says protect yourself from a sunburn that's going to give you skin cancer, protect yourself from a jellyfish that's going to ruin your holiday. You know, just take sensible precautions, and then you end up having a really good time at the beach rather than coming away with some sort of accident happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to tell you that I sort of indirectly experienced a jellyfish sting. I was snorkeling in the Bahamas, and my swimming partner suddenly started screaming, and she had been wrapped around by a jellyfish, and it was horrible. I mean, the welts went right around her waist, and I was stunned by that. We didn't see the actual jellyfish, but what do you do when you get stung? Because it is a serious issue.
Well, yeah, and it's a very frightening issue. I mean, certainly this alien creature with its slimy bits wrapping around you and slapping you silly, it's a very scary thing whether you're a child or an adult. You know, I've been stung sometimes, not so much anymore because I take all the right precautions. But, you know, certainly as a child in the water in Los Angeles, I was stung. You know, it is a very frightening thing. We've got thousands of species of jellyfish around the world, and different species have different sorts of appropriate treatments. So there's no one treatment fits all, you know. I mean, I think it's better to prevent the sting in the first place, but I think certainly if there is any one treatment fits all, it would be, no matter what the sting, make sure that the person is, you know, staying alive. I mean, if they pass out and need resuscitation, give them resuscitation, call for help, call for an ambulance, you know, assuming that it's just a minor sting and they don't lose consciousness, rinse it off with seawater really well to rinse away any stinging cells that are still on the skin so they don't continue to get more sting happening. Common sense things like that can make a lot of difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, in our case, we were fortunate. We had a book that had what to do, and it said put vinegar on it. And we were on a boat. We actually had vinegar. And it seemed
oh, fabulous. Vinegar is the first line of defense for the dangerous jellyfishes. It actually neutralizes the stinging cells. It doesn't take the pain away, but it stops any more venom from entering the body, which you certainly want if you've got a dangerous sting. It doesn't work for all species, but it does work for all dangerous species. So if you don't know what got you, it's always a good rule of thumb to use vinegar, but a lot of people, you know, they don't have vinegar handy or whatever, and in that case, I would recommend using seawater to just rinse it off really well. Mm-hmm. And again, just make sure that somebody doesn't have a bad reaction where they lose consciousness.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction here that you are the world's only jellyfish taxonomist. What's that actually mean?
It's kind of one of those big fancy science words. I'm actually the world's only full-time jellyfish taxonomist. There are other people who do name and classify species. That's the science of taxonomy. But I am the only full-time practicing taxonomist, and that means that I am a bio nerd of, like, you can't even imagine, okay? I am a geek with a capital G. I spend all of my time traveling around discovering new species, and what can I say? Most of the time I'm either looking under a microscope or playing in a library or up to my armpits in slimy, stingy things.
considering how many there are and how ubiquitous they are around the globe, why is there only one person on the planet doing this?
Oh, because it's unfashionable. Nobody wants to work with slimy, brainless, boneless, spineless, no visible means of support kind of animals. I think it makes you feel too close to home.
Okay. Well, I've been reading here that your beaches in Australia have been invaded this year by a huge armada of blue bottle jellyfish. What's that all about?
Yeah,
how unusual.
Blue bottles are amazing creatures. They're a relative of the Portuguese man o' war, but they're a smaller, less dangerous relative. And we've had huge numbers washing up on some of our shores this year. We do typically get armadas washing up, but we've had a couple of very, very large blooms this year. And, you know, probably nothing related to global warming or anything like that, just the way the winds are going and the animals happen to be in the right place and they catch the wind. They've got a bubble that sits above the water with a sail that kind of sticks up a bit and it catches the wind. So if there's any sort of wind when they're around, it'll just push them along. But they're absolutely incredible animals. They come in right-handed and left-handed forms. What we see as an animal is actually a colony of animals. You know, the Portuguese man of war or the blue bottle is a colony, and these colonies are right-handed or left-handed, which means that they tack against the wind in certain ways. So when a breeze comes up, it strands half the colony but not the other half. Absolutely fabulous.
That's great. Well, as a sailor, I'm
fascinated
that.
By these things.
I thought maybe you were going to say the right-handed ones were south of the equator and the left-handed ones were north of the equator.
Not quite that fascinating. It's actually that they're just like us. There's right-handed and left-handed forms in the species, in the population, but half of them go that way and half of them go that way.
That's
weird.
Astounding stuff, yes. Well, before I go...
I just love them.
obviously. And as you say, they do look like aliens. I was in an aquarium in France, and they had jellyfish in a tank, but they were lit by black lights.
Oh,
and they had the most
nice.
Incredible iridescent purple glow to them. And
yeah.
There was nothing else there in the tank. There was no background. So it really did look like they were floating in space as alien creatures. It was very beautiful.
Ah, it's true. They're just amazing. I got my research start, actually, at a little public aquarium in Los Angeles called the Cabrillo Marine Aquarium. And when I was I was there with my marine biology class years ago and came around a corner, and that's exactly what I saw, these jellyfish just hanging in the water, and just glowing with this sort of forever iridescence. It was just incredible. And they captured me. They really did. And they've never let me go. And I'm now no longer, working at Cabrillo, unfortunately, but I still am fascinated by jellyfish. And many, many aquariums around the world now display jellyfish, and it's one of the most popular display items, one of the most popular exhibits that any aquarium has. And they'll all tell you the same thing, that they've supplanted the sharks in the number of comments that they get in the suggestion box. Just fascinating, because they are so strange. We humans just look at them and think, wow, that is alien. And they're just amazing. Everything about them is just unlike what we know.
Do we know how old they are?
Yeah, believe it or not, they go back before the Cambrian. They go back about 585 million years. That's about an order of magnitude older than the dinosaurs. These things go way back, before clams, before bugs, before vertebrates, before anything. These things were there in the dawn of time. They're just amazing. And there's species that were present almost 600 million years ago that still look the same as ones today. It's amazing. They haven't changed because they haven't needed to. They've perfected the art of survival, and it's working for them. They are just unbelievable.
They got it right the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Now, life according to the jellyfish.
Well, before I go, I have to ask you, Gershwin is not a very common name. Are you in any way related to the famous Gershwins?
I am, thank you. I prefer to think of myself as, earning my reputation in my own right, but thank you very much. That's kind of you to notice.
You are related.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you.
Well, Dr. Gershwin, it was a great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much. It's been a wonderful time talking to you as well. And I hope that we can maybe go to the beach, maybe take you out and show you a jellyfish or something.
Okay.
With protective clothing on, of course.
And it won't be pantyhose.
That I want a picture of.
Okay. Take care.
Thank
it was really
so
great.
Much.
Bye-bye.
That was a blast.
Lisa Gershwin is always a blast. Not surprising when you remember she is indeed from the actual Gershwin family. Lisa Gershwin is based in northern Queensland and tells people there all about the marine environment, as well as studying those Irukandji. Next week at this time, I shall be in conversation with Frank Howarth, director of the Australian Museum in Sydney. I'm Robin Williams.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.